Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And you join us for an hour of chat about Land Rovers and everything to do with owning them. If the podcast sounds a little bit different this week, it's because we're recording it a little bit differently. Due to scheduling and other logistical reasons, we're actually doing it over this thing called the internet, aren't we, Steve?
Yeah, I'm a stone's throw from the salmon sofa in the studio, but weirdly speaking to you like an hour away. It's so strange.
We were really hoping that we'd get the chance to, because unlike a lot of podcasts, every single episode is recorded, regardless if it's just me and you or us with a guest in person. We've not ever done one over the internet, so this is a first for us. So apologies if the audio isn't quite what it normally is. We're going to try and make it work, though.
Yeah, so in our defence, though, it's because I'm fresh back from Ripon, i.e. Sunday, and this is Tuesday. So the podcast will be out in less than 24 hours from now.
Indeed, yeah.
Because we've run out of time.
Yeah. It's a lot. People have podcasting as a full-time job, and to us it's just, you know, it's another thing on.
So it's another plate to spin, isn't it, for us?
It is.
The most enjoyable plate to spin of the week, though.
Probably the most important and the most enjoyable, I would argue.
Definitely, yeah.
But, so I didn't go to Ripon, you did. What was it like? Because I've only been to Ripon once before and I loved it.
I absolutely loved this one. I know I say this about every single event we run. Ripon, for me, I don't know, it's just something special about it. You see people and you see Land Rovers and Land Rover parts from people who you don't normally see at, say, Newbury or Malvern, in the traditional circuit, shall we say.
Right.
There's people as far as Falkirk in Scotland. They'd come from Durham. They'd come from Cumbria and Yorkshire, obviously. Whilst everyone around this area was experiencing like mist and fog and rain, we had 23 degrees heat.
I couldn't believe it when you told me, because the weather here was pretty dreary, to be fair.
I mean, you can tell we're British. We've immediately started talking about the weather. But when you're stood in sort of 4 degrees at 6 a.m. on Sunday and you couldn't see a few feet in front of you, as soon as that sun burnt that fog away,
yeah,
a glorious sunshine. And it's just fabulous. And what highlighted to me was how many people from that area listen to us on the podcast, and I met quite a few of our listeners. So, lovely to meet some people and very positive comments. So thank you. Much appreciated. Made us feel like we're, you know, doing the right thing and saying the right things.
The fact that that Ripon seems to be getting more popular shows that there is definitely a hunger for auto jumbling up north. So that's really cool. And like you say, you do see a lot of stuff that you wouldn't otherwise on the Malvern and Newbury days. So yeah, I'll definitely make it to the one to early next year. Because, like I say, it's a lovely venue as well, isn't it, Ripon?
It is. I mean, the grounds are lovely. Ripon itself is lovely. It's worth going to. And we saw a massive increase this time in terms of traders and people on the day visitor. So
word is spread.
It's brilliant. Yeah, all the good stuff. And there was some fabulous stuff there. I missed out on a pair of front wings. I'm a bit gutted.
Yes.
I saw a pair of front wings coming in on the trailer. And obviously I'm on the trade and day gate. And I quickly got on my radio and Marshall to one of our marshals, Mark, and said, "Mark, see that trader you were about to put in?" I said, "Have a word with him, will you, about those front wings?" He goes,
"Snare them.
How much does he want?" And I think they were going to be £300 for the pair. But he said, "Right. I'll put them aside for 20 minutes while you come over." But I never got back over there. They were gone by the time I came back. So I was disappointed.
You've got to be quick off the mark, haven't you?
I did see some lower dashes, mind.
Did you? Maybe. But they've been...
Do you know what? I was still tempted to look at them. It's a bit sad. I've got a lot of obsession with lower dashes now.
So, the UK's premier collector of lower dashboards.
Yeah.
But, oh, good. I'm glad it...
Yeah, really. It was some great vehicles as well, just to see. You just see different vehicles, yeah, different Land Rovers turning up. And yeah, there was a Series 2A 109 original grey project on a trailer.
Oh, right.
That turned up and I was like, that's nice. That's lovely. And then Kate, who works with us, said, what, that? I said, oh, yeah, that. That is beautiful. And he sold that. And quite a young lad, actually, said, oh, see that? I've just bought that over there. I said, what, the project? So it's gone to another good home. It's going to go and live on a farm.
Very good.
Really lovely to see something original and unmolested and just ripe for restoration. An honest truck, you know? We were very sorely tempted as well, I have to say. So LRM contributor Tim Hammond came along.
Yes, with, he told me he was going.
Bits and pieces. And as he turned up in an LREG Discovery 200 TDI. So it was registered in January 1994. Totally three-door, totally original, and unmolested. And he had a price tag in it of $4,995. So my wife, Louise, was working on the pay gate alongside me. And she said, I said, look away now. And she said, obviously, she looked straight at it. I tell you what, I would have wanted that. I did want that.
That's actually, knowing it's coming from Tim, it'll be top notch anyway, because everything he does is right. But that's actually seems like quite sensible money for one of them at the moment.
So he essentially, there's a guy that said he was going to have it, providing he didn't get kind of the money he was after at Ripon. And it did, it was a proper head turner of a Land Rover, because you don't often see them unmolested like that anymore.
Yeah.
And, had a little bit of lack appeal on the bonnet, like a proper, honest, classic car. And if I didn't have my 90 in a project, I would have bought that immediately.
And if you didn't have a bill coming for your beloved Jag.
Oh.
Should we get on to the Jag?
do you know what, mate? I've said on this podcast, haven't I, about running a Discovery 3 and having to rely on a local garage, a local specialist to look after it, and it being the most expensive motoring I've ever done.
Yeah.
Do you know what, right? This Jag, it's a premium car. It's an XK, 2010. Full JLR service history, and then obviously specialist since in the last sort of 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
It's 5 litre naturally aspirated V8. So it's the same engine that would appear in
Discovery 4 import.
Discovery 4 import. So it's not a non-supercharged. Yeah.
Oh, talking of which, can I just chip in quickly? We were put right. I said I saw that V6 Discovery 3 in Rhodes.
Yes. Yeah.
And we speculated thinking it was a Jaguar engine. Someone has commented on the podcast on YouTube and said, actually, it's the petrol V6 using the Discovery 3 was a Ford unit. It was a 4 litre Cologne engine. And the V6 in the F type and later Discoveries was the AJ126, which was the Jaguar type. So we were wrong. It's actually a Ford engine. So thanks for putting us right on YouTube.
Oh, well, there you go.
Sorry to interrupt, but I
every day is a school day for us as well, isn't it? Yeah. So the Jag has sprung a coolant leak,
right?
And I took it to a local mechanic who said, "Oh yeah, water pump. They all do that." And I thought that's strange because it only had one like 20,000 miles ago, before my ownership. Did that, and it's remained the same coolant drop level since. So it's worth keeping an eye on things like this, whether it be a Land Rover or your daily car, but. It was using like 400 mil of coolant every 200 miles.
Right.
So enough to worry, and it's going somewhere. It transpires it's one of the coolant hoses at the front, I think it's the output one, that sits in the inlet manifold at the front.
Okay.
So the inlet manifold has to come off to find, they have it's plastic pipe essentially, and they go brittle and they have a crack. And they can let go, so that's a fair and just dump all its coolant. So I've caught it in time. It's going to be done. The bill's going to be £750 plus the VAT for just that. It's quite it's quite in depth.
Yeah.
And then I had the gearbox service done on it, which is a ZF box, the same as D3s and D4s, isn't it?
So ZF 6HP.
Yeah, so sealed for life, which technically isn't. So I wanted the gears to change a bit more smoothly. I thought it felt like it was time. And also a main service. So I'm probably in for a couple of grand worth of bill.
Yeah. But this is the thing, isn't it? And people is get so tempted. I mean, you that what you paid for that car a couple of years ago, when was it? 3 years ago now?
2.5 years ago, yeah.
Was indicative of the car it was, the condition it was in, which was excellent. But it's still a fraction of what it would have cost new. And that's what people, I think you can, it's so easy to fall into that trap when you see stuff like older stuff that comes up for sale on like eBay or Facebook and you go, wow, that's so much car for the money. It is, but it still needs the same amount of maintenance and attention as it does when it was brand new.
It is essentially the car version of an aging, because, you know, 2010 Discovery 4 or an L322, something of that ilk. It's exactly the same because it has the same quirks as a Land Rover. It's a JLR product. Of course it does. You know, I might have mentioned this on the podcast before, but I jumped in it probably a month ago and I thought, well, I need to get my hair cut because, you know, my quiff was touching the roof. Well, it wasn't that. It was the headliner decided to just one day give up, just like it does in a Land Rover. You know, that was a £400 replacement.
Yeah.
So that with tyres plus servicing, you're in for now £3,000 on a car that costs £700 to tax and £450 a year to insure, because I'm old. Older, and then you start to work out, well, I've done 6,000 miles in 2.5 years. It's like almost it's a pound a mile before I put fuel in it.
It is not cheap motoring, is it? But it is a lovely car. It's one of them. If you like what you drive enough, it's still worth it.
Oh yeah, I'm not going to turn my back on it.
Yeah,
you know, that's the thing. I'm not going to go, oh, it's costing me a fortune. But you know, next year it might not. May or may not cost anything, you know, apart from the normal just oil service or something. But
yeah,
it didn't cost anything last year. So
that's it. Yeah,
how I look at it, kind of on average. But anyway, it reminded me of the days where I had a Discovery 3, and it was costing an absolute fortune to sort of keep on top of and to keep it in the condition I want it to be in.
Yeah, yeah, because that's the other thing you notice, and you see it a lot, sort of. Older as they fall into sort of workhorse territory, like for you know, people use them as vans or just cheap hacks. When anything of that sort of era gets a bit dog-eared, it looks really rough really quickly.
Yeah, you've got to keep on top of it. So it made me quite envious of people like you, really, I suppose, who've got skills to, you know, if that was your car and the coolant was leaking, you'd probably have a go yourself. And
yeah, potentially, but also you've got to know when you're like, I try not to get too involved in anything anything I don't own that isn't a Land Rover, simply because I don't know my way around other makes and models quite that much. So I know it's a similar engine, but didn't really work on that many 5 litres in the dealership. So I don't know them that well. So if I was doing the job for someone else, I'd be less confident. Do you know what I mean? So you're paying for the specialist's experience and knowledge. You're not just paying for them to swing spanners for an afternoon.
No, absolutely. Because, I mean, you know, a local mechanic to me has probably misdiagnosed where that coolant was coming from. It was coming from behind the water pump, not through the water pump.
Right.
So I've now had a new water pump on it, and that probably doesn't need to worry. But yeah, the knowledge, I think, is where the value is really at with these guys. And it's the same with Land Rover specialists. And swing it back to Land Rover, for me, I would sooner buy a Land Rover that was like, you know, when you know someone's owned something for a few years and they proudly present all the receipts that a specialist, so that specialist has got to know the customer and the car, preempts things coming up. So it's like time and experience and money invested in that car, not just money.
Definitely. Yeah.
And I think that's where, and we often get back talking about buying Land Rovers, don't we? But that's where it's at, you know. Speaking to a chap, actually, he's a listener to the podcast on Sunday, and he has owned, I think he's got Discovery 2 now, and he's owned that for 14 years, and he's previous Discovery 1 is had for 13 years.
Oh, right.
So you, with that kind of length of service, you're properly invested in that car, aren't you?
Definitely.
And kind of like, you know everything it needs. And I think he said he spent about £3,000 on his Discovery 2, but better the devil you know. He just recently spent £3,000, but getting it all properly done to keep on top of it.
Definitely. And it's that other, when you find something that suits you and you enjoy, you like it, you find it comfortable, you find it user-friendly, whatever, why would you change it? Because it's old? No, you would invest in it and you'd want to make it last. And that's something we see a lot. And it's something, again, Land Rovers lend themselves to really well, is because, you know, the part supply is so, well, normally the part supply is so reliable and accessible, and they're rebuildable. They're infinitely rebuildable. So there's a lot to be said for it. So while you were at Ripon, I spent the entire day, I was going to pop out to the shed for a couple of hours and have a quick tidy up. And I ended up absolutely ripping the place to bits and trying to blitz it as much as I could. So satisfying. It looks fantastic now. Apart from the 200 TDI that's in bits on the floor, the actual work area with the worktop and all that is spotless, and everything's tucked away, everything's sorted, and I'm so pleased I did it, even though it took me, I went in at about 10, came out at about 6. It took a long time.
Wow, yeah. That's probably a really good use of time, actually, because whilst you're not actually doing anything to one of your vehicles, it makes working on your vehicle better when it's organised.
It's all stuff I've been meaning to do since we moved into this house over a year ago. And I'm really, really pleased I did it. But it did highlight to me that I need to get a tool chest, like a toolbox. So I obviously headed to Machine Mart's website, and I think I've chosen the one I'm going to get. So on their website, it's actually on a little deal at the moment. It is the Clark CBB217C Heavy Duty Plus 7 Drawer Tool Cabinet. It's got 29 five-star reviews, so I think it's probably going to be quite good. It's a 7-drawer tool cab with wheels on it and a handle, and you can get the additional top box if you need extra space, £322.80, which is pretty good for the size, I'd say. If you need a toolbox, there's a huge range of them on Machine Mart's website. Head over there, have a little look, and see what suits you. They got loads of different brands on there, loads of different sizes, and you can of course customize your tool storage to exactly what you need, because at the moment all my tools are still in separate, you know, like when you buy a socket set and it comes in like the blow molded case. Everything's still in them, which is great if you're taking them out and going out to work on something, like I did that Series 2 for that wedding. That was really convenient, but when you're at home it isn't. So yeah, I do want to invest in a better sort of on-site storage for tools, and I think that's probably what I'll go for. But
and you get familiar with which drawer holds which things, and that's the thing, isn't it, when you're in and out of them all the time. So I've got one very similar to that, the three stackable type thing, isn't it?
Sort
of soft closing drawers and things, but I've run out of room, actually, because when you, it's like a shed, isn't it? However big your shed is, you'll run out of room.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. But the modular nature of it is handy, because you can lift the top box off and use that if you're doing something on the floor or whatever. It's all it's quite helpful.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specializes in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified, and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own, and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value, and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information, or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
Funnily enough, you mentioned your Jaguar's tax. Now,
sore subject, tax, isn't it?
Well, we should start by saying that this is just a rumor at the moment, and it's hearsay, and there's potentially nothing to it, but we can't ignore the fact that it's been brought up by a couple of news websites that there's talk of possibly reintroducing tax for classic cars over 40 years old, which is pretty upsetting, as you can imagine. Because both my 110 and your 90 are coming up for 40 years old next year, aren't they?
Yeah, so mine's 40 years now, but I think it would be tax exempt from the 1st of April next year.
Yeah, same as mine.
It's the following year. So that, do you know, this happened to me back in the day with a Land Rover. I can't remember which one it was now, but when, because we've had that various tax systems in the UK, haven't we? Where when it gets to 1972 or 1st of January 1973, it was, wasn't it? Before. And then they've reintroduced it as a rolling 40-year thing.
Yeah.
Do you know, I did a bit of research on this, actually. Do you know how many people that will affect in the UK?
Go on.
It's been reported that 297,400 people are running cars actually on the road at 40 years and above.
Right.
There's another 45,000 on top of that, which are currently sawned. So they're off the road. So, yeah, potentially that will earn the government in this country, if they do start taxing them again, £107 million.
It's a lot of money, but
it is.
Are they, I think they're possibly barking up the wrong tree. I would say that, obviously, because I've got the Series 3, which is tax exempt, and the 110, which is going to be tax exempt. But I don't know. How many people realistically are doing more than a few thousand miles a year in a classic? With
no, they're not.
When you can, this, exactly.
Yeah. I'm not. Yeah. I mean, I'm only doing 3,000 miles a year in a car that's £700 a year tax.
Yeah.
Because it's not it's not my daily. So
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a tricky one, but all it will do, I think, is push people into sawning the cars during the winter, taking them off the road, or you know, whenever they're not using them, and then jumping on the tax website, doing a direct debit, which is like it'll be 20 or 30 quid for the first month, and then cancelling it again when they don't want to tax it anymore. It will just cause a backlog and massive
definitely. If they think for 1 minute that everyone's just going to tax their cars for a year, they've got another thing coming. So that 107 million is probably taxing all of those cars for one full year.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing I read earlier was that the classic car industry, and let's say Land Rovers are all part of this industry that 40 years and above, provides £3 billion in UK tax revenue. It's already generating the money because it's worth over £3 billion in the UK economy. I just don't get it myself. And if they don't tax them, do they still provide no MOT? That you're MOT exempt, but you still have to pay tax.
I think MOTs would have to come back because you can't tax. You can't physically tax. If you went to the post office with your modern car, or went online and tried to tax it, and the MOT had expired, you wouldn't be able to. So I don't see how they could change that for classics. So that's going to be another massive backlog of people trying to get all their classics MOT'd.
Yeah. And if they are using them at choice times, around key times of the year, springtime, the MOT system will be overrun with nearly 300,000 vehicles all coming for an MOT.
Yeah. Again, it's important to emphasise that this is just what we've seen at the moment. There's no substance to it, regardless of how it's been presented by a couple of different news sources. It is just something that someone has heard, someone's possibly thinking about. We'll find out in November when the budget is announced, I assume. But at the moment, something to be aware of, but not worry about, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, at the end of the day, would it stop? Would you get rid of your Land Rover because of it no longer being tax exempt?
No, definitely not.
Me neither. But they would. I mean, you know, if I look at my, let's call it a fleet. My wife doesn't listen to the podcast, and she probably hasn't actually worked out how much we're paying in road tax a year.
Does she know about the other two cars that you don't keep at home?
Yeah, I don't even know about those. I did add it up. I think it's something like £1,400 a year we're paying in road tax at the moment.
Right.
And the silly thing is, yeah, all right, I don't have to have a £700 a year tax car, but I think it's my last opportunity in my life to run a 5 litre V8 or even a V8 petrol, because you're almost, you know, the demon, aren't you? It's going to be antisocial in times.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people who are diehard sports car fans or, you know, real followers of certain manufacturers are taking the opportunity now to go and buy an internal combustion engine car from their preferred brand, because it is the last hurrah, probably, for engines. I know there's a lot of backtracking and a lot of sort of uncertainty about sales of EVs and all this stuff. It's not something I've looked into. I don't really care, to be honest. But yeah, it's sort of the last hurrah, isn't it, for a lot of brands to sell these high-powered engine, you know, internal combustion engine vehicles, regardless of whether they're a sports car, a 4x4 or anything else. But yeah, it's funny.
The other thing to consider is, though, as time goes on, a 40-year-old car today, in 10 years from now, would be a 1995 car.
Yeah.
And they become really usable.
That's what they're worried about.
I think they're seeing a growing market of 40-year-old cars that are actually quite usable. So by the time you get to mid-90s, you're having fuel-injected cars, essentially, that are really simple to fix.
With squishy seats and air conditioning.
Yeah, just about. And then they're being used as dailies. Because I read something else the other day that for the first time ever, the average age of a car on the roads in the UK, is over 10 years old. It's just past 10 years old.
Really?
For the first time, yeah. So when you normally go down the road, you know, when you sit in the car parks, you look around and think, what do all these people do for a job with all their 3-year-old, 1-year-old cars? But the actual UK average is just surpassed 10 years. So people are holding on to their things longer now.
That's probably, that average is probably dragged down by a lot of our podcast listeners who have a series or an old shape Defender or something on the driveway and have no intention of giving them up, and rightly so.
But in Ireland, their tax system is different again, isn't it? So they have to pay, like, for a high emission car, over €1,000, don't they?
Yeah, but I think they also have a special tax for classics as well, don't they, after over a certain age? I think you still have to pay something, but it's nowhere near as much as, because, yeah, modern big engine cars in Ireland are horrendous to tax, is my understanding. But, yeah. It's interesting, and we'll still have to wait and see how it plays out. At the end of the day, most people who own a classic aren't going to give it up because they have to tax it. And at the moment, as we've said already, emphasised, it is only a rumour. But yeah,
it's like people who drink and smoke, right? So they get hit quite hard, don't they? At when it comes to the budget time, and yeah, you could argue that pubs are closing, pubs are closing daily, aren't they, in the UK? But there's still enough going around to keep them afloat, or some of them afloat. It's just tricky. You've also got the 5p fuel duty, likely to 5p a litre fuel duty cut at the moment, haven't we? That they might bring back in.
Oh, yeah, of course. I forgot.
So fuel might jump up a fair chunk as well. All things to consider, but if it's your passion, I just think life's too short. Should just get on with it. Keep the classes.
That's quite
ultimately, I think you'll save. I mean, it's the thing here is if you can fix a car yourself, imagine how much money you're saving fixing a more simplistic car than you are, say, a modern thing where you're having to pay over £100 an hour to a garage. I think that's horses for courses, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It's that whole thing, isn't it? Are people reverting back to older stuff? Are they seeing the value of simple, basic vehicles that get you around reliably and are cheap and easy to fix when the time comes? And, you know, I think possibly I'm absolutely, I love driving older stuff as well. Obviously, I'm looking out the window now and the Series 3 and the 110 are out there, and they just like, just everything is mechanical. There's not a lot that will stop them. It's brilliant.
Well, it sets you apart from your neighbours. You know, in your neighbourhood, you're known for being a bit different as well. It's your personality. It's an extension of your personality. You haven't just followed your crowds and gone into a, you know, a Chinese car manufacturer and just said, oh, how much a month? Just because it fits with your budget, you don't care, you know, what your car is, how much techs it got is the number one reason why younger people will go for a car these days, not
the other
performance it has.
Yeah, I was going to say the other thing that I think it's very easy to forget when you drive sort of more specialist type vehicles, whether that's an old Defender, a series, you know, like the one you mentioned, Tim Hammond had an early Discovery or anything like that, three-door Freelander even. Because they're becoming all that much rarer, you might just see it as transport, but other people, and like especially kids who might be into cars, they'll see that and they'll think it's absolutely awesome that they've seen that on that day. And that's something that actually is quite nice. Do you know what I mean? Like when you park in Tesco, you just think, oh, you know, I've gone to the shop, I need to buy this, that and the other. You're not thinking about it. But people who've walked past your car have probably gone, wow, when did I last see one of them? Or, wow, he keeps that in really nice condition. Or, you know.
Yeah. We take them a bit granted, don't we?
Yeah. It's weird. But
spreading joy. One Land Rover at a time.
Keep it going. It's good. In fact, I've got a great email here from a young chap called Duncan Walkinshaw. He says, hi, I've recently started listening to the podcast and absolutely loving it. It's definitely helping me settle into life with a Land Rover, having very recently started to use my diesel P38 Range Rover as a daily. It promptly blew up its front drive shaft. I'm not sure it wants to be used as a car. Anyway, I bought it 4 months ago and it's been amazing apart from that. Lots of learning curves and major learning, but getting there. He says, it's a bit of an upgrade from his previous Ford Fiesta. I'm only 18 years old, which most people don't think, of when you buy a 24-year-old money pit. Yet here I am loving the P38 and also have a 1989 turbo diesel 90, which he's had since he was 15 years old. And he's made good progress on that until he's went on a bit of a break with it and he hasn't been back to it since. But it's got a brand new chassis and bulkhead. Anyway, look forward to listening to the podcast more. Kind regards, Duncan in Edinburgh. Duncan, keep the momentum up. Get back on that 90 and crack on with it, because that's half the battle, isn't it?
Yeah, no, definitely. Sounds like a nice set. Yeah, I haven't driven a P38 for ages. I kind of want to get in one again, really. It's okay.
They are, I really like them. I don't really like, they're sort of like in that of that age where you think, well, okay, they're old enough to be kind of reliable and easy to work on, but new enough to be comfortable. They're old enough to be reliable from certain aspects, but things like the body control modules that can give bother and things like that, they're all items that can take longer to fix than just nuts and bolts. But they are, like, as a vehicle, I'm a well-sorted P38. It's a lovely thing.
Yeah, just haven't been in one for a long, long time.
Yeah, I can't remember the last one. Probably the last one I drove is when I bought a 4-litre SE. It was Christmas time. There we go. It was Christmas time a good few years ago now, and I was on Marketplace and scrolling along, and this Range Rover was on there, and it was £350. And I clicked on it and thought, that can't be right. And he said, I was non-runner, haven't got time for it. Bit scruffy, been using it to tow my scaffolding trailer. It is what it is.
Mm.
So I went and had a look at it, and sure enough, it wouldn't start. Plugged the diagnostics in. It didn't have any codes on it. So I thought, it might be worth a pump. And I was in the car messing about. My friend was chatting to the owner. He's a nice enough chap. And I said, do you know what? I'll take a take a gamble for 350 notes. You know, it was on coils. It had been used hard. It wasn't a nice example, so to speak, but got it back. Had a little fiddle with it. And it turns out my mate was chatting to the fella. He filled it up with a can of petrol out of his garden because it was getting low, and it had 2-stroke oil in it. And that was all it was. It had bad fuel. So I pumped all the old fuel out, put some fresh unleaded in it, and it was started up straight away.
Oh, nice.
So I didn't keep it very long. I sold it because I didn't really need it. But it, like I say, been coil converted, but they're so much nicer on air suspension.
Yeah, I you often see people converting from coils to from air to coils. I just think, just look after the air suspension. It was there for a reason.
They're not exactly expensive to put right now either, really, not the air suspension systems on them. But no, really, really, like I say, a well-sorted, a nice one still on air. They're a really, really lovely thing to drive, especially V8 one.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. Not the quickest thing on the road, but...
Even the 4.8s are pretty... 4.6.
I was going to say, which one have you been driving?
No, sadly not.
Bored out one.
Yeah. Our friend Adam's actually been back on lamenting our lack of Range Rover chat. I don't know if you saw the email. I can't remember if I said forwarded to you or not. But
did you forward an email to me a minute ago? Like, as in, like, an hour ago?
Yeah, I did. It was that was a reply to the one that he said, "Hi, Martin and Steve. Just about caught up on the recent podcasts. And as usual, I've been enjoying the topics of discussion of late. However, I've noticed that you've stopped mentioning L322s and if they're a good buy or not. I know Martin has a soft spot for them. I certainly do. Well, having had a few of these over the years, I've been fancying another for a while. Not to replace his daily driver, which is the Discovery 4, but you can never have too many Land Rovers. So he's been looking around and he's bought a very, very nice 4.4 TDV8 L322. No, he hasn't. He looked at a lot. He looked at a lot of 4.4s and he found some pretty rough ones that weren't quite as advertised. And he walked away from a good few of those before happening upon a very, very nice 3.6 TDV8 autobiography, 2010 one. So one of the late, one of the last 3.6s. And it's had some fairly choice modifications. It's had all the gloss black stuff put on and darkened windows and stuff like that. So he's sort of peeling all that back and making it nice and standard again. The L322 love is still burning strong, Adam. Don't worry. We just don't go on about it quite as much as we did when I was thinking about getting one. But yeah, they're a lovely car, aren't they?
Do you know what? I was talking to somebody at Newbury, actually, who uses L322s for, he's got like a plant business, he's towing big trailers and stuff.
Yeah.
And he's doing, and I don't think he was exaggerating when he said 60,000 miles a year he drives.
Wow.
Up and down the country. And he buys L322s for around £2,500-3,000.
Really?
And he takes them and he gets rid of them as soon as that hits 250,000 miles. I said, why at 250 does something happen? He goes, no, just a nice round number. And he gets £1,500 for them with 250,000 miles. And right. mostly, he said Eastern Europeans will buy them and they end up in Poland.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Right. Okay. So he said, you know, I can do, you know, for £1,000, you can run them. And all you've got to do, he said, is service it, change your oils and use it. He said most of the L322 problems is through lack of use, in his opinion.
Yeah.
Use it, change your oils, and keep going. He said they're brilliant, absolutely brilliant cars. That's all he uses. Wow. There you go. Yeah.
That's it's fairly unusual, I'd say, to see one at that kind of mileage.
What, 250,000?
The mileage he's getting rid of them at, yeah.
Yeah. No, he said they don't miss a beat. He said, but... You know, I wondered whether he was getting rid of them at 250 for a reason. He goes, no, he said it's just a nice round number. And it's just the point in which he decides to offload them. And he always had another one ready and waiting and does a few things. And yeah, I often wonder, you know, they have grown on me. I know a lot of people say to me, oh, you keep, you know, moaning about L52s, but I've not really had much experience with them. I'm sure if I drove one regularly, I'd quite enjoy it.
The late ones are just fantastic. The like Adam's got the facelift 3.6 and the 4.4 and the 5 litre, that last sort of iteration of L322. Oh, they are just amazing. The quality of the materials in the interior and the way they drive, just brilliant. I'm talking myself back into thinking about one.
Yeah, any minute now, I tell you, after this podcast, you're going to be straight on the internet, aren't you?
Possibly.
But having a quick look.
Talking of Land Rovers that have sailed, I was watching Harry Metcalf on YouTube last night, Harry's Garage, and occasionally I watch his Harry's Farm channel as well. He is selling his Series 1.
Oh, okay.
He's selling it at the NEC restoration show.
In November, next month.
That's it, yeah. It's a 1954 Series 1 86-inch. It says it's offered directly from Harry Metcalf, founder of Evo magazine. So, yeah, I mean, there's not tons of detail about it yet. It's a very, very honest-looking little thing. It's very, very nice, actually. Says he's had it since 2014. One of the first cars to appear on his Harry's Garage YouTube channel. And nicely sorted, recent top-end rebuild, starts on the button and ready to be enjoyed. And it's, yeah, it's really, really sort of honest patina short wheelbase.
Do they have a guide price on it?
Estimate is between 10 and 12 thousand.
I was gonna say 12. Yeah.
It might do. I mean, you'd be paying more for it because the buyer's premium's 12.5% plus that, so you've got to factor that in. But yeah, it's actually really, really cool, really, really nice little thing. So yeah, if you're a Harry's Garage fan, you could own a bit of the history of it. Very, very smart.
I'm going to that show, actually. I quite enjoy that show.
Keep an eye on it. See what it goes for. But yeah, that's the one we did the big Range Rover walk around on, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's on YouTube, isn't it? We did like Facebook Live when the Iconic Auctions were selling off that collection of Project Range Rovers, mostly, wasn't it?
I haven't looked what else is for sale in the auction, to be honest. Might have to have a look. A little gander at the catalogue.
I have heard a rumour that there may or may not be a Clarkson spec L322 entering that auction. This may be wrong. I may be right. He may not send it there, but my contact said he may be offloading one there. And it is.
Oh, an actual Jeremy Clarkson vehicle.
Is it Tonga Green? Tonga Green.
Yeah, he has got a Tonga Green one.
Mm. No, so not an actual one, but a Tonga Green L322 nonetheless.
Oh, right. Yeah,
with 180,000 miles on the clock.
A lot of people are jumping on the fact that him and Harry Metcalf have got green L322 TDV8s and are describing them as such in hope of getting more money for them. I don't know. There's a really cool Instagram page called L322 Marketplace, and it really goes into depth on each of the vehicles it finds, and it really breaks down all the spec. Really quite interesting.
Hmm. So, you know, Harry Metcalf and Jeremy Clarkson did that video on YouTube with their L322s, didn't they?
Yes.
When they parked them next to one another and were talking about them. Well, I've just done another one actually about Jaguar. That's a really good watch actually. It's probably about 45 minutes of Jeremy on his farm with Harry, who lives next door basically. One with an F type. Jeremy bought a 2013 F-Type convertible, which he just drives daily. And they were talking about what is peak car and what age. Yeah, it's really good. It's a good watch. So even if you're not interested in Jaguar, but you're interested in what is peak car, have a watch, because I think that's really, it's over a million views. It's their stuff gets insane views.
Yeah.
Not quite caught up with the LRM podcast listener numbers, but hey.
Well, obviously when you're number 12 in the UK podcast chart, this is what you're up against, isn't it?
I know. Do you know, it's quite a nice thing to look at, the podcast chart. That one again.
I don't know how accurate it is, but it is nice.
If you were number one, you'd say it was very accurate.
I don't think we'll ever be number one, but it is nice. It's just a nice thing to do, isn't it? And it's so nice, and it's great that other people are are on board with it, and it's just two people talking about Land Rovers, basically. We don't profess to be anything overly professional, but people enjoy it, don't they?
Yeah, I think that's it. I think it's nice to be relatable, because we are doing the very things that our readers of the magazine and listeners of the podcast are doing. We're the same. We are one of you. We're not anything special.
We're literally just normal people doing normal things with Land Rovers.
Love Land Rovers? Then you'll love Land Rover Monthly, the world's best-selling Land Rover magazine. Packed with adventures, expert tips, restorations, buying guides, and loads more. For the best deals, subscribe today at landrovermonthly.co.uk and never miss an issue.
There you go. Yeah. Do you want to hear of another normal person doing a normal thing with a Land Rover?
Another listener question. Yeah, fire away.
Not so much a question, but a bit of feedback. Brian Edge has been in touch. He says, dear LRM team, after listening to the LRM podcast here in Minnesota, I found myself inspired to add a classic Defender 110 to my garage. This came after already purchasing a new Defender 130 for my family. The addiction is real, and thank you for feeding it. Well, you're welcome.
Yeah.
He says, I've also heard recent discussions about your podcast about the lower dash, so I thought I'd share an outstanding experience I had with Boston British Classics. For those looking for a brand new lower dash that works with a 300 TDI era Defender, Martin at Boston British Classics has exactly what you need. His attention to detail, follow-up, and overall quality are simply outstanding. I would highly recommend any of your listeners and readers of LRM become aware of his products and services. He's really good, and he deserves recognition. Thank you again for the inspiration, the stories, and the community you've built around these remarkable vehicles. Warm regards, Brian Edge from Minnesota. That is an absolute pleasure. An absolute pleasure, Brian. And I had a look at that website, actually, bostonbritishclassics.com, and they're remanufacturing brand new lower dashes, which is really cool.
Yeah, no, I had a quick look after I'd purchased my second lower dash from Newbrand.
Slowly building your empire.
Building my collection. And Boston British Classics, in fact, have started advertising Land Rover Monthly in the magazine.
Excellent.
So, if you listen to this and want their contact details, go and buy the magazine and
pick up a copy and see what they're all about.
Yeah, brilliant.
Talking of the issue of Land Rover Monthly that's on sale now, how about we do feature of the week and, of course, product of the week? Does that sound good to you?
It does. It does indeed. I've got something else to say, actually.
Go on then.
No, we'll move on to that after.
You sure?
Yeah. Somewhere I went really interested in the other day, actually.
Okay. First of all right, we'll do feature of the week now. Regular listeners may know that I started a Facebook page as a bit of a joke called the XCL Appreciation Society.
contributed the other day.
You did. You saw a prime candidate at the Ripon's Thursday. Well, another vehicle that's adorned with the absolute tire of the gods is a 3/4 ton lightweight prototype. This is covered in the classic section of the current issue, which is on sale now. Gary Pusey done a fantastic job documenting this. And what this is the vehicle that was designed to replace the 109-inch series military vehicles for the British Army. It never really got off the ground for reasons that you'll find out in the feature, but it's a really quirky, really cool-looking vehicle. And its nickname is the Big Lightweight, because that's essentially what it is. It's a sort of air portable style military vehicle which has been developed for the army, and it can be fitted with a variety of different setups. It can be stripped, so it can be stacked on top of each other. It's a really, really smart piece of kit, and they've recently discovered that instead of the two prototypes that were thought to exist, there's actually three. So there's a bit about that really, really cool feature, so be sure to check that out. Products of the week. This is a really cool thing, actually, and something I've been thinking about getting for my Series 3. So a lot of disc brake kits for series Land Rovers, specifically design development engineering's kit, you can't use standard steel wheels because they hit the caliper. But design development engineering have just launched a standard looking wheel, which does bolt straight onto the hub and it doesn't hit anything. So you can have standard looking wheels on your series Land Rover. If you've converted it to discs, which is something that's becoming a lot more popular, a few different ways of doing it. But if you've got the DDE kit, as I have on the front of my Series 3, and you want a standard looking wheel, it is an inch wider than a normal series wheel, 6.5 inches rather than 5.5. But that allows you to fit slightly wider radial tires. They're tubeless as well. Really, really cool. £102 each at designdevelopmentengineering.co.uk.
That's not bad at all, is it? Really?
No, I don't think it is. So yeah, be sure to head over there and check them out. Sorry, Steve, what were you going to say?
Right, so good news. A new parts website has been launched.
Okay.
And these are from the people behind British Motor Heritage, which I went to visit the other day, and I had a tour around. So British Motor Heritage are the guys who make brand new body shells for MGs and Minis, Bonnets, three types.
Oh, right.
And proper old school place. So they've been in business for forever almost. And I had a look round, and they've got this fabulous operation where you've got all the jigs for all the wings for MGs and Minis. And these guys, it's like going back in time in there. Anyway, they saw a gap in the market for a new parts, Land Rover parts business. So they have launched a website called BMH4x4.com. The site went live yesterday, in fact. So check them out. They've got parts for all Land Rovers. You've got LCT2 and P38A are coming soon, but the rest is all on there already. Yeah, check them out and see if your model's on there. They've got some parts, accessories, special offers. If you sign up for their email, they'll keep you in the loop with other bits and pieces. But yeah, give them a whirl. They're going to run some ads in the magazine as well. So if you are subscribed to Land Rover Monthly, you'll see what they're about. But cracking place. I had a really good tour around. Just nice to see some British engineering. It is old school way, you know?
Yeah, I always enjoy whenever we go anywhere, like Richards, for instance.
Yeah.
Seeing that companies like that are still thriving, and it's great to see someone doing something new. I've actually just gone on their website, and it's really cool. It's really like intuitive, and it's really smart.
It is. So, yeah. It's been a few months in the making, but I was privy to their sort of coming soon campaign. So which they've run in the magazine, and I was having a look at, just the way you can just easily select the model and the years that you've got, and then you narrow down the parts you want. So check them out. But they'll be able to supply, you know, quite quickly. So from point of order to getting them to you, yeah, everything's in stock.
Good stuff. Exciting times. Good to see someone. Again, just the sheer variety and accessibility of Land Rover parts are something not to be taken for granted. I think the recent cyber attack has highlighted that, really, because we were sort of without a lot of stuff for quite a while, and like you say, parts are starting to trickle back in, but it's easy to, you know, forget just how crucial and how easy we do have it now with regards to actually getting stuff, you know, delivered in no time at all for our vehicles.
Yeah, definitely not like the old days where you'd send off a stamped address envelope for the catalogue and please allow 28 days of delivery. That was used to be the old thing, didn't it?
I don't know. I'm not that old, mate.
Pre-internet days, you'd if you wanted a catalogue, you'd like mail order was a thing. So you know, the old people will say this, don't they? I'll send off for that. Well, you don't send things now, do you? You know, it was just done instantly. And yeah. And now people like Amazon have made it so that some things can be delivered the same day, you know, people's expectations. So it's only when a supply chain issue arises that people realise how used to it we are, you know.
It's also a bit of a problem. You mentioned the Amazon thing. I know, like, a lot of smaller businesses that I've spoken to over the years, that's really a problem for them because people's expectations are there now. And realistically, if someone's in a small workshop making products that they sell, they're never going to be able to compete with click a button and it arrives the same or even the next day. But, you know, it it's a bit of an issue. A lot of people have sort of got that those standards are set so high that it's almost impossible for smaller independent businesses to deliver to that same level.
Yeah, no, definitely. The trouble is people have just got such few patients now, haven't they?
Yeah.
Such needy and, yeah.
Yeah, but don't know. It's weird, isn't it? I always say good stuff's worth waiting for. So give these people time and, yeah, they can do amazing things. And we're lucky to have so many innovators and, you know, top quality manufacturers in the Land Rover scene. So, yeah, all good stuff. But I think we'll wrap it up there, shall we? It still feels weird seeing you across the screen rather than, like, laughing at you in person on the salmon sofa. But hopefully... normal service will be resumed next week. So thank you for your patience if you're listening. And I hope this doesn't sound too different to a normal podcast, but we didn't want to miss the week. So, and we didn't want to deliver it late. So this is what we've had to deal with, but hopefully back to normal for the foreseeable future.
Definitely. Before we wrap up, so we are now, this goes out obviously tomorrow, which is around 10 days before the last Bears Day of the year, which it's not too late to pre-book your tickets to the Three Counties Showground at Malvern.
Definitely.
So if you are looking for those last minute parts to do your restoration over the winter, this is your chance. So it's looking good. We got a lot of trade at that one.
Malvern is always a cracking day out as well. It's a nice, lovely bit of the country. And like you say, tons of trade indoors and outdoors. And
loads of it indoors at this one. And I'm going to make sure this time I get my own list together and I go out and I'll go and get those bits, because this is the last time opportunity till February. So
yes, indeed. Yeah. So LandRoverMonthly.co.uk if you want tickets. You save money if you pre-book, and you also get in quicker. So make sure you do that. It's making
queue just goes a lot quicker. We scan to you, people are in, and you're off buying all the bargains before anybody else. So make sure you do.
Absolutely. And all good. Instagram, follow me if you want, Land Rover Martin. Follow Steve, your Steve Miller Automotive. Obviously, Land Rover Monthly has an Instagram page. You can keep up to date with all the latest events, all the latest that's going in the magazine. So be sure to give that a follow. Subscribe to our YouTube channel if you want. We haven't uploaded as much recently as we'd have liked. We've been busy with a lot of stuff, a lot of really exciting stuff for next year. So keep your ears and eyes open for that. Don't miss out. Sign up to the newsletter again if you want to hear about all the latest stuff first. You can click the link on the website and sign up for that. Absolutely free. It's decent, relevant content. We're not just going to spam you with rubbish. And sign up, subscribe to the magazine. Subscribe to the magazine. Last sales pitch of the podcast. You get it sooner. You get it cheaper. You don't have to traipse out to the shops. Why would you not subscribe? It makes total sense. I think that's me done. I'm all sales out, Steve.
Yeah. The only thing I'm going to go and do now is go and get some lunch.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm going to do the same. But
we'll catch up next week.
Indeed. See you next week. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.